Accession number 31420.
Mr. Harry Chalk, Reel 3. Now, tell us about this journey up the Nile, because it's quite a journey. What do you remember of it?
Journey, yeah, just one of them Nile boats, which are still going strong now. But I got on it with a load of other people from the Worcester. There was three regiments in the Sudan, the Essex, the Worcesters, and the West Yorks. And on that boat was about at least 20 people from all those regiments, different people. And off we went on the old boat, living a life of luxury. Well, to me it was, you know, absolutely marvellous. Waited on hand and foot by the old fella Heen, the old Egyptian fella Heen, you know. And we stopped at the Valley of the Kings. Had a little look around there, like, you know, for nothing kind of thing. Then we stopped at Wadi Alpha. That's the halfway staging post there to Khartoum. And eventually we reached Khartoum. After, I forget how long it took us up. It must have took us a week, I suppose, or 10 days. But it was a lovely holiday. And, of course, when I got to Khartoum, straight on a train to Atbara, which is where the battalion was stationed for nearly a year. And our job
now, there... Now, what was Atbara like? I mean,
it was a one-horse town.
Can you describe it?
Yeah, it was at a... It had one Greek restaurant. It had six or seven houses. A long, big road with hitching posts for the camels and God. It was just like an old pre-Western cowboy town. And we had our barracks, an old wooden barracks, up at the end of it. There was a British embassy place further down the road, you know, like a British Bosman place. And that was about all. That was Atbara. And the only thing...
How did you take to the climate? Because it's even hotter there than Egypt, isn't it?
It was bloody hot, yeah. But the funny point was everybody was walking around there with nothing on. No helmets, no... Everybody was black as the ace of spades, you know. We burnt black. And nobody got sunstroke or nothing. And when you think about 40 years before, you had to have spine pads on and big helmet on your head and God knows what. But since we was at Atbara, it was all our only job was to guard the bridge.
What and bridge?
Atbara bridge across the river Atbara. And there was nothing to guard from. Nobody wanted the bridge. We didn't want it. And of course, it wasn't till we was there when France collapsed in June that the Italians came into the war. And now we're in the poor, aren't we? Now, like, you know, it's three little old battalions in the Sudan, which, as you know, is the biggest country in Africa. And there's 3,000 troops against 500,000 bloody Aitais in Somaliland, Eritrea, Abyssinia, and God knows what. But anyway, pick her up, never mind about that, like, you know. Yeah, now, the old Aitais came over in the old aircraft.
Now, tell us, there's two raids mentioned here. One with leaflets.
That's it. The first time they come over, they drop leaflets on us.
What do they say?
It's just surrender, you know. Give this to the Italian soldier, and you will be treated like, you know, as a prisoner of war. You know, all the normal silly thing they used to put on a poster. Because obviously enough, that was use of lavery paper, wasn't it, that was. You know, there was never no thought of us ever surrendering. Never entered the minds. Unbelievable, the British surrender.
Now, what would the real raids start then, don't they?
About a fortnight later, the real one come over. About 19 Savoni bombers. But they were so high up in the sky, and we only had Bren gun anti-aircraft. Had no anti-aircraft guns. And he had Bren guns and rifles. So we was blazing away at them. They were still about 5 miles above the bullet. Had no chance of hitting them.
Did they hit them?
And they had no chance of hitting the bridge anyway. They was dropping all over the place, bombs at miles out of the way, just harmlessly in the desert, nowhere near us. Then they seemed to jack it in a bit. And, of course, when we went back, the old CO, our CO, they said, well, D Company, 17th Platoon, go down to Eritrea and let them know you're British.
What do you mean? I mean, I know what you mean, but can you just explain? What were you meant to be doing? Just causing trouble or what?
Well, yeah, that's right. We were meant to have gone down here and attack this place and bang it about a bit to let them know we was about, you know. That was the first action, like the big action that I was in.
And this is on the 9th of August?
9th of August.
Now tell me exactly what happened.
Well, on the 8th of August, I got down to the jumping off place down at Eritrea, at Kassala. And it was my birthday. I was 18 on the 8th of August. On the 9th of August, I was walking towards these high tides fort. Getting shot at, if you know what I mean. And my officer, Captain Genders, he got killed straight away. He was walking beside me. Joey Dan, another one of my mates, got killed straight away. Sammy J, Lance Corporal Sammy J, he come from South End. He got mortally wounded. And Baldy Warner, another one of my mates, he got shot and killed. And two other of my mates, Clark 28 and Cook 01, they both got wounded.
Now, what were you doing when this happened? I mean, what were you trying to do?
The idea was to take the stronghold, you know.
Now, where was it? Where was it? What were you advancing across?
Down Eritrea. We was against an Italian, whatever it was. We didn't know where a regiment was there, company or what. All we know was that it was too heavily defended.
So what were you doing? Advance, because in the book it says you had...
Yeah, we walked across about 400 yards of open desert, thinking that we was like doing the 1914 stuff again. We learnt later on you mustn't do those things when they got high-powered machine guns and things. I'd have thought we'd have learnt the lesson in the First World War. But anyway...
Did you get anywhere like near them?
About 200 yards, I think, was the nearest we got then in the end.
And what happened in the end? How did the attack break down?
Well, the funny point was the officer and our officers was killed. Captain Genders, he was killed. So we had two sergeants. Elf, I can't think of his other name. Elf, he's our quartermaster sergeant. He won the MM. And all of a sudden, I can recall a 1,500 weight truck reversing towards us with a machine gun on the back of it. And there was two Sudanese Defence Force officers was firing this machine gun and giving us covering fire while they give us orders to retreat back out. And of course we didn't want a second telling, did we? We were straight up and back. And when we got about out of range of rifle fire and machine gun fire, we all had a blah, 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 so, you know, see what was happening, who was dead and who wasn't. But our dead ones, we left there. They're still there now, to this day, as far as I know,
Now, had you been scared in action? You know, it's your first time in action.
It didn't scare them. I didn't realise if it hit you, it would hurt you. I've seen so many cowboy pictures, they got a bullet in them and they was all cured the next day, weren't they? No, it never dawned on me that, I don't know, you never, whether we were thick or what, none of my platoon. Later on, we began to know that the lumps of shrapnel were in, you had a big lumps of jagged, tall lumps out of you. And everybody got a bit wary of them, but that first action of mine, it was just like a load of, well, I don't know, like a film unravelling, you know. It happened and it took about an hour and a half, 2 hours, it was all over.
Now, what happened next then?
Next thing, we had one of my mate, we pulled him out with us, little Sammy J, and he was dying. He'd been badly hit. And anyway, during the night, we retreated back further back into the Sudan, and he died in the night. And we buried him the next day in the sand, you know. And left him there, put a cross on him and his helmet. And he's still there to this day, as far as I know. He was South End boy, he was and all.
Now, so what happened next?
We went back to Atbara. Atbara, and then for about 2 days, everybody was chatting about it, and bang, it just disappeared back into the doings. And of course, what with France falling and God knows what, everybody was in a bit of a tiz was. And next thing we know, we're on our way down towards the Abyssinian border. And when we got down
there... Now, that's the whole battalion this time.
Yeah, the whole battalion. And an RA unit of some 25 pound of guns. And we got down there, and all of a sudden we heard this droning in the sky. Well, we'd never seen an English plane then. We all ran under a bushes all like, you know, take cover. And it was old Anthony Eden. He was Winston Churchill's sidekick, wasn't he? He'd come out and tell us that England had their backs to the wall and we must do our best to, with what we had and what we'd got. England depends on you and all that, and, yummy, yummy.
What did you think of it?
Oh, I don't know. It never dawned on anybody. It never dawned on us for 1 minute that we could lose the war. Although we hadn't got a chance in earthly of winning it. Not one chance. We never knew that. And of course, that was it. It wasn't until the Americans came in the war that we had a little bit of an uplift.
So what happened then? So you had a visit from Meaden. Then what?
Yeah. And that was, I think, about November the 2nd or the 3rd. Then he buggered off, didn't he? He shot off with his squadron of Spads, Gloucester Gladiators. And we felt very lonely then. And the next day we attacked the fort on November the 5th.
Now, this is the fort of...
Gallabat.
What do you remember of that attack?
Well, that was a bit airy there because we was in that fort near enough for 3 days.
Now, what do you remember of the fighting?
Well, I'll tell you, it was a bit hairy, really. It was no actual arm-to-arm fighting, because as we was running up the hill to take the fort, which had been bombarded by the RA, the high tide was running down the other side. So when we got to the top, the high tide was down the bottom at a village called Matema at the bottom. And of course, they had us all zeroed in, and so for 2 to 3 days, we stood nothing but get bombed, shelled, and God knows what. How everybody never went crackers. The only thing was, the Italians were such wonderful trench builders that we never had no fear of getting it, you know. Once we got into their trenches, what they dug, we seemed quite safe, really.
What was it like being under heavy bombardment like that? People don't experience it now. What do you remember of it?
Just the earth shaking, that's all, crunch, 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 all the time. Then, of course, when the shelling started, that was banging about, and the shrapnel flying everywhere. Then they started using airbursts. That was, they exploded in the air and sending off millions of little ball bearings all over the place. That's why people wear steel helmets, you know. That was how they first come into being, over the shrapnel. And of course they used that. And in the end, somebody had the sense to say, well, I don't know, keeping so many men in such a small area, I think we'd better get out of this. And they withdrew us down to the bottom of the hill, where we got relieved down there by the Gwalis and the Baluchis, two Indian mobs. And of course, we went back from there to Khartoum.
Now, so the Italians never did counterattack while you were there?
Never, no.
Now,
we lost one bloke, my mate Chota Royce. He got his leg blown off on a mine, because when all the British done was sent out patrols.
Did you go on a patrol?
Yeah, but you never see nothing. You know, they was. I don't know where the eye ties was, whether they see us coming and nipped off or whatever. We never see them. The only time I see them was when they was running down the hill away from us. But of course they was there, because well, we was getting everything slung at us for what they'd got. Anyway, the Essex had enough there, and they took them out and put them back into Khartoum. And then from there, trouble was rearing its ugly head in Palestine again. The old Mad Mullah was at it again there. So they sent us from Khartoum.
So that was it for you in Abyssinia and Eritrea,
yeah,
was it?
The
big thing really was this Galabat action.
Yeah, that was
And the
one.
Previous one was the one where on your birthday,
yeah,
or day after your birthday.
Skirmish.
So that was a skirmish, and then the big action was Galabat.
Call them skirmishes, but you could have got killed in either one of them, so it didn't make no difference, you know what I mean?
Now, but you get ill again, don't you, at Khartoum?
Yeah, I went ill, yeah. I got malaria again, and a few of my mates from our company, and we got into hospital in Khartoum. Once again, the battalion left from Port Sudan by boat. I don't know what the boat was, that one. They landed at Haifa in Palestine, and we were still in hospital in Khartoum. And we was there for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, I think it was, or maybe a bit less, but back again, we went down the riverboat again from Khartoum right the way down to Egypt, and then by a truck to Palestine over the Sinai, and we rejoined the regiment in Haifa in Palestine.
And so when did you rejoin them? January 41?
About January or something like that, you know, around about that area.
Now, what that was in Haifa. Now,
yeah, 1940 that was. No, 1941.
January 41.
Yeah.
Now, what was going on then, when you got there?
The Arabs had revolted again. They'd had a lot of trouble in 1936 with the Mad Mullah and God knows who. And we had the Jewish people to help us, but Britain wouldn't have none of it. So they made a Palestinian army of Jewish boys, you know, just for home guard like, you know. But all they was doing was nicking their arms and ammunition. They knew they was going to leave them soon, and they was going to make sure they weren't going to be unarmed when the Arabs give them one. All we had to do was go up and down Jericho, Jerusalem, Nazareth, Nablus, all over Palestine on train patrols, you know, put a bogey in front of the train.
Tell us about the train patrols then, you know.
Well, we used to go from there to Sarafan and Tel Aviv. Well, I was building Tel Aviv then, it wasn't built. And that was going along there. We put these here big cow catchers in front. So if the Arabs have mined the old railway truck, the railway track, the old train would take the first bang, you know. But other than that, they'd already done the damage, the Essex, because they was in Palestine in 1936, and they'd already made a name for themselves with the Arabs as being a bit vicious, so they was a bit wary.
What were they supposed to have done to the Arabs?
Well, you know, and life was cheap with them. Britain didn't tolerate what they tolerate now. They just shot them or hung them. They hung them mainly. They just hung them. And of course, while we was there at the time, up till May, we was there till May. And from the time I landed, I never left there till May. That was till the Rashid Ali revolution.
So what were the barracks like at Haifa?
No, not bad. They was, once again, you see, they was pre-war. They'd been built. They'd had a regiment there, like, for years, you know, in Palestine, since the 1914 war. And, of course, it was right on the bay, like, beautiful sight, lovely sight. Come straight out of there into the old Mediterranean for a swim.
Now, tell me some more about the patrolling work you did. So sometimes you're on the trains. What other patrols did you do?
Well, there was always the old football, the foot patrols. We had a great big monastery at the back of us on Mount Carmel.
So tell us what a typical foot patrol was like from start to finish.
Yeah, you just walked about and made yourself known, you know what I mean? Just like being a copper in England. When you see them on the street, they're there, aren't they? You know, the presence is there. And of course, the trouble is that at the time, the Palestine was getting overloaded, and all the refugees and the Jewish people, and that weren't helping none. The Arabs didn't like it. And of course, they hated us for it. They'd always hate us. They'd never like us, you know that. They always believe we're the evil, and we are the evil, I suppose, to them.
But you seem to have had a fairly good time, though, from your book. You know.
Well, the point is, we've had good laughs. We used to go along on a patrol. Then you get a Jewish girl come out dressed in a blue uniform, little blue knickers and a little blue brassieres, and asked for a lift. And when you did, about 1,000 Jewish people would jump out and jump on your lorry for a lift as well. You know what I mean? And then often you got the big watermelon lorries past us. And that was when our bayonets come into action then. As they went past, we stabbed the watermelons. And that was it. And then we had watermelons for a couple of days. And they are good, them watermelons. They are lovely.
So what would you do for recreations? Were you allowed out from the camp?
Yeah. And without being armed.
So what would you do?
Well, we used to go and just in the cafes have a beer. Tiger beer, I think they called it in Israel, well, Palestine, isn't it? Tiger beer. Have a beer, but normally you just found your own bloody entertainment. Nobody had any bloody money in them days. The army weren't paid nothing. As you know, the top wage was 14 shillings a week to a single bloke. And I made an allotment home of 7 shillings, so. And out of that, they stopped 2 bob anyway, 2 shillings. For PRI damages, so all I got left with was 5 bob. Now, that didn't go far, did it? When you had to buy a flat in and Blanco and God knows what. But as I said, when the ITIs came into the war, the footing became much more relaxing. You know, people was, in other words, there weren't not too much bullshit to worry about. We done a few marches in Palestine to Jericho.
Now tell me about them.
Jericho. That was 3 days. That took us 3 days.
What was that march like? That sounds tough going,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it was bloody tough going. About 20 miles a day we was doing. Today, I mean, it sounds nothing, I suppose, but in them days when you had your kit and your rifle and you march for 50 minutes and you stop for 10. Then you march for 50, stop for 10. You've done roughly about 3 miles an hour, roughly, you know. So 20 mile a day was a good day's march. Got to Jericho, that was it. And turned round and all jumped on the bus and come back to Haifa again. You know, like a silly thing. They keep your mind occupied all the time, you know. And as it happened, the Arabs were very kind to us. They didn't cause too much trouble. You get the odd flare-up. They are attacked a kibbutz now and again, you know, like, and we had to go down there and sort it out and fire a few shots where you thought they was and they wasn't, but everybody made a big show and that was it. Now, and that was our stay in Palestine.
Now, you were there, what, how long?
Till May.
Till May, that's right. So, now, then there's trouble in Iraq.
Rashid Ali overthrew the government. He threw old King Faisal, the boy king, he slung him out. So we was one of the regiments that was there that had the, what's his name, you got to go in and knock him out, get him out. So the Essex took on the Iraqi army.
Now, what happened? How did you get there? Because it's
a
fair way.
We went by truck over the River Jordan, into Transjordan. Or Transjordan, then it was called. We met Major Glubb there in his Arab Legion.
What do you remember of him? We interviewed him.
Yeah.
Oh, he's dead now.
Yeah,
but I mean,
he has, yeah.
What do you remember of him?
Yeah, he's a little fat, what's name bloke, you know. He thought he was Lawrence of Arabia, didn't he? That's what he thought he was.
What did you think of him?
Yeah, well, I thought he was, yeah. Well, we didn't mind him because he was helping us. That's what, You know, even the help he gave us was handy. But we met him. I mean, he often came over to us to, what do you call it, liaison with the officers to let them know when we was going to attack this, that and the other.
But you wouldn't speak to him, would you?
No. I've seen him a couple of dozen times. I've met him, you know, not to say hello, Major Club, how are you? You know, and you say hello, Harry. No, I'll see him on his bloody horse or his camel, whatever he was riding.
And what do you think of the Arab Legion? I think that's...
Well, at the time, I thought they was tip-top. They was pretty good. Because during the old Yom Kippur War, I mean, they gave the old... This is one, didn't they? I mean, that was the only mob, really, that put up a bloody good fight in the Yom Kippur War against the Israelites.
Now, what happened then? You're going through Transjordan...
Well, we got there, we got into, and the first thing we had to do was the RAF at their big base at Habania was cut off, and we had to relieve them. The Kurds up in the hills, and the Iraqi army had had them well cut off. So we attacked Habania in the morning, and the Iraqi army disappeared again, and we relieved the RAF.
Now, what do you remember anything about that attack?
Yeah, we got on the way there. To relieve them, we got machine gunned by two bloody Messerschmitts. They come down and hit our column. They never hit nothing. I don't know what they were. They right the way along. Then they had a go at the aircraft on the ground and never hit nothing there. So they must have been poor bleeding pilots. Anyway, when we got to the Habania and relieved the RAF, we got kitted out again there with kit and spent about a week there. And then went straight on to Fallujah and took Fallujah off the Iraqi army. And then from there into Ramadi.
Now, hang on. What do you remember of these actions? Or did they just retreat before you got there?
No, we had a few little skirmishes mainly.
What do you remember of them?
Well, you know, like bullets whizzing around and a few little banging about in some graveyards. They was fighting and riding behind tombstones and anything, you know. Then they just disappeared down a runner.
So they wouldn't stand and fight.
No, we never had a stand up fight with them. Never. As soon as they started, they let us know they was there with all the bullets. But once again, hardly anyone was ever hit. And we had a lovely, not a lovely time, but you know. As far as the regiment was concerned, on active service, we got away with bloody murder. And at Ramadi, anyway, my mate, old Buzz Barn, he captured an Iraqi prisoner. And he kept talking about it. I wonder he never took him bleeding home with him all the time. He kept on and on and on about him. I said, for Christ's sake, Buzz.